connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for the web.
Computer today.
Computer.
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 NetSurfer Pro.
We're doing a talk surfer.
Mm-hmm. A whirlwind ride through whatever we want.
Yep. I am your host, Galen.
And I'm your co-host, Matthew Marissa. And we're doing a talk surfer, and we will be mostly talking about video games, but we will not be talking about Tears of the Kingdom, because neither of us have really played it. I'm probably not going to play it, but I've watched people play it quite a bit. But neither of us have played it, so there's going to be no spoilers, no plot details discussed, no new characters mentioned.
Yeah.
We're not even going to say the letters L, O, and Z in the same sentence.
Yeah, exactly.
Except for this time where I say those letters in that sentence, and here where I say Legend of Zelda, because that's what L, O, Z means.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, I am shedding tears of the Galen because I cannot currently play it, but I will trust me, I'll be the canary in the coal mine regarding Tears of the Kingdom and its amazingness and the cool facts about it. But that's for a different day.
Yeah, so let's look at the new Zootamayo. Fuck!
Damn it!
So, yeah, but God bless her, Akane finally made the music video public in America. We can view the music video on release.
Yes.
Finally. They found out how to click the button that says to allow it in other countries. I can't believe it. So it's the first single off their next upcoming album that'll be releasing in June, which I'm super excited for. I believe it's the first single since Time Left was technically done for Chainsaw Man, but with it came a new music video, and oh my god.
Yeah.
There's so much going on in it.
It's, good.
I need to explain. We kind of talked about, like, when we did the Zootamayo episode, or episodes, two-parter, we kind of talked about how there sort of is and isn't a canon, that the music video canon is dubious. Usually it's that the repeated characters and situations are symbols and motifs,
yeah,
that are just commonly used, but there's not much of a direct narrative connecting things. Now, there's been some hints since then. I don't think Neko Resetter had come out when we did that episode, but Neko Resetter sort of created this, like, hub nexus world of all the Neras and Greys.
Yeah.
Which is also the setting for the card game.
Yeah, the episode that we did came out at kind of a perfect time where the last song was really the one that confirmed that there was, you know, some kind of actual overarching thing. But even then, the last song, spoilers alert, was about basically killing all of the Neras.
Yeah. Kansaite was definitely sort of a major hallmark.
Yeah. But, yeah. Like, it was still very much an anthology thing. And then...
So, yeah, there was Neko Resetter, which has the Midnight City. There was also Mirror Tune, which later came out, which kind of had some more crossover-y stuff. It also gave us the fighting game image, which one of these days I'll make public my list of what I think each character's archetype would be.
Yep.
That's a whole list. Maybe if we ever start doing, like, a Patreon, that'll be a bonus episode.
Hell yeah.
And then the most recent, however, Intrusion, is wild because it has so many references, but it feels very, like, intentional with them.
Yeah.
So, to sum up the music video, the events of the music video, the Nira has, like... cat ears or something.
Yeah. The Nira and the Gray both have kind of like cat ear fluff.
Yeah, and they were experimented on by Hybon Electronics. Gray was eventually captured by Hybon Electronics and brought back, and the Nira is running away from these cloaked figures who seem to be trying to kidnap her, using like a zappy ray gun to shoot them. Very, like, what, like, 60s,
yeah,
astro-futuristic...
1950s, yeah, Gucci, like, wee-wee-wee-looking things.
Yeah, and eventually she does get captured and brought in, and I think, like, the Hybon Electronics people give her, like, an injection, and the injection gives her these glowing eyes, these like black eyes with red. And the black and red eyes are a thing that was also in Time Left. And I think that was also part of the big monster Gray turns into in Hunch Gray.
Yeah.
But so the Hybon Electronic skyscraper was in Hunch Gray. And the like hill that is shown throughout the music video was also the hill in Hunch Gray. One of the wild things, just like not even mentioned in the background of a few shots, is the Nira maid in the Robo Xbox dad.
Yeah.
From Darken.
Yeah.
I
straight up didn't catch this. Marissa did and like lost their shit. And I was like, what?
I freaked out. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, you can't just do that to me. They're dead. Yeah.
You can't just show the corpse of someone I love.
I mean, Unigiri did do a cute dance, though.
Unigiri did do a very cute dance. So, that was what distracted me.
Yeah. So then also, there is the, like, bio tank that was in... What all was it? It was in part of Hunch Gray. It was in Ham and Dear Mr. F. There's this running storyline that's repeated in a few different music videos of, I believe, Gray being experimented on by Hybon Electronics in like this bio tank, and so that's brought back here. Also, another Nira made a reappearance, the Ham Nira, which was like a pharmacist almost, like researching a cure for some sort of disease, presumably what Gray has.
That was the Nira who was like in the satellite dish area, or am I thinking of a different Nira?
The Ham Nira, she was in like an apartment building filled with plants.
Right.
And in the music video, she's like taking care of the young Nira in Gray.
Yeah. Although the one with the satellite that I can't remember the name of.
Quilt.
Yeah. That one is specifically referenced, like, that is a location that the Nira goes to at some point in this music video.
The, like, satellite station / power station from Quilt is early on in the video. Also, she has the case that Kansaite Nira had of, like, where the glasses came in.
Yeah.
And she also was eating the, like, scissors cake from Stay Foolish. So, other references there. I realized just now, as we were talking about it, the scarring that was on their faces, Gray had that scarring in Hunch Gray on his face.
Ah.
And then also there is a segment in like the first post-chorus where you see a bunch of other characters, including Time Left Nira, Nanashi, which is the Gray like Oni girl from Darken. I want to say the terrorist NECA resetter Nira specifically, but it could have been Reporter. They look the same on purpose.
Yeah. It looked like she was wearing a suit, which is why we think it's the terrorist one.
Yeah. There was another Nira that I think it was Kansaite Nira. There was the, like, Vivi-looking dude from Can't Be Right.
Yeah, so unfortunately that one is still canon.
Yeah. There was a Gray with, like, a ahoge, the little hair pointy thing at the top of the head. I don't remember if that was in... I want to say that was the Stay Foolish Gray, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it's it was the Gray that was part of the Burger Pants Mafia.
Yeah. Oh, that's Kansaite then.
Okay, yeah.
And then one of the other characters had just, like, a white silhouette, so we couldn't tell what it was. But it looked like the gun dog from One's Mind.
Yeah.
So lots of references to older stuff. But the fact that it's like, even the doctor from like Dear Mr. F and Fastening was there.
Yeah.
So like so many different things were referenced in this in a way that concretely put them in the same location. There's a lot of times where the music videos reference other ones, but it's vague. Like One's Mind has this shot of like all the different Niras in sort of just floating, but it's sort of a representation. It's more metaphorical than logical or realistic or literal, I should say. And then in Mirabeau, the Nira from that is like rotating in one scene and she changes into the other Niras that animator did. But that one too is more metaphorical than literal.
Yeah. Yeah, the closest we've had before in I guess season one was the part where the Neera unzips and becomes Space Neera.
Well, there was a DNA.
Oh, right.
Neera
going
back to the like gamer room and smashing the monitors, like in that one Apple commercial. She will not be controlled.
Yeah, this is like a game changer, kind of.
Yeah,
because like even the other videos had a lot of references, and I think did have some specific characters from previous ones, but there was nothing that was so like clear a timeline as this yet.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah,
it leads into a lot of other things, like the other post-apocalyptic Zootamayo movies. I also want to mention that so last year there was a video game announced, animated by Kung Fu Piggy, that I believe is technically a Zootamayo video game. It uses Nanashi and the cat Nita from Study Me.
Nice.
So it at least has them as main characters. Not much has been shown about it since then, but I do wonder if Intrusion is part of a larger sort of narrative push for the band.
Yeah.
Maybe including that game? Because the scenes that have been shown have also been sort of post-apoc, because that's the setting Nanashi is in. So yeah, very interesting stuff. I love it.
I'm excited to see what comes next. This is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know what else is cool?
A lot of things, but go on.
Terraria.
Ooh.
So, my friends and I, my online friends and I, have been playing Terraria for a little while now. We've been kind of on and off about it. We've been off mostly. But we made our way through a good amount. I don't think we made it to the end, but we made our way through a good amount. And another friend decided that, hey, you know what we should do? Because we want to get back into it. We should go ahead and download the Calamity mod. And I just want to talk about it very briefly, because I'm not even at the start of Terraria, basically. Like, I have not actually fought the Eye of Cthulhu. We accidentally summoned one boss because we didn't know what one of the items did. But I want to talk about it specifically because I feel like the Calamity mod makes the early game of Terraria so much better. Like, the biggest problem with Terraria, I think, really is the early game. It is, you are very slow, you are very underpowered, you don't have a whole lot of options for what you can actually, like, do. And so, it's, you know, it's very rote, and I wouldn't say it's a comfortable rote. It's a bit of, like, eating your vegetables to get to, you know, the first boss. Calamity, automatically, your stats are slightly buffed from the beginning. Chopping down trees very frequently drops a lot of food, and so food often had, like, specifically fruits that give you minor improvements to stats. And you get a starter bag that has essentially, like, a very underpowered version of, like, one of more or less all of the standard types of things you can do. It gives you a bunch of throwing bricks if you want to get into throwing weapons. It gives you a staff if you want to get into magic very early. It gives you a summoning staff if you want to get into summoning very early. And my favorite thing, there are these little robots. They're like Wolfram is their name.
Oh, like the website.
Yeah. They are lore-wise literally described as just like the shittiest, least well put together things. But through them, you get materials that are like really interesting early game options. Like, you know, there's throwing knives that sometimes they will, you know, drop instead of get destroyed. And then you can hold right click when holding them to recall anything that's around you, which is like a really neat little thing. There's armor that, like, you can double tap zero and consume one of the items that they drop to basically create a suit of power armor for a little bit of time. You can create a quote, bionic arm that is essentially just a better magic staff. And so, like,
does the bionic arm have startup invulnerability on frame one?
No, unfortunately.
Damn.
It actually functions more like Bionic Commando from the early days.
Okay, not MVC3 Bionic Commando.
Yeah, not MVC3 Bionic Commando. We're talking earlier than that. We're talking the reboot from 2006.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But yeah, it's it adds so much genuinely interesting early game decision making.
Decision. Cool. Give me my decision making stuff.
Calamity, like, that's, we are.
That's like that item of the month shit, what you just described. If you know, you know.
I do know, briefly.
Sort of, yeah.
Just Calamity Mod, it's, we are. I might talk about it in a later talk surfer once we're actually really in it, but like, oh my god, if you hopped off of Terraria for, you know, one reason or another, I would like, it's the kind of thing where I would genuinely be like, try it and, like, you know, maybe don't look at a wiki first. Because I'm willing to bet, like, I have not looked at a wiki except to look up specific questions, more or less. But, like, it revitalizes so much, even in the early game. And so, just, I wanted to briefly say, the Calamity Mod, super cool, extremely good. I actually happen to know one of the artists who was on it. A friend of mine is their brother, which is really funny. It's real. It's like my uncle works at Nintendo, but real. I mean, I also know them. They're a cool guy. But yeah, no, just it's like immediately can tell the quality.
So now that you've explained all that, I'm actually kind of interested because, like, I fell off of Terraria because the early game was so slow.
Yeah.
And it didn't scratch the creative itch of Minecraft. But, like, I know that there's a lot going on there once you get into it, that it's, like, this whole thing, more than just a survival game.
Yeah.
But I could never hold enough interest there. I would just hear that song that goes, do 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 do. But, like, I would just hear that for, like, 5 hours, and I'm like, I'm done. I can't focus.
Yeah, that's fair.
But that all sounds really cool. I don't know much about Calamity Mod, but what I do know is it has some, like, incredible music as you get to the new, like, bosses and locations and stuff.
Yeah.
Shoutouts to DM Dokuro, who is a really good composer for that sort of drum and bass type bit. So you have some music to look forward to.
Yeah, I do have some music to look forward to.
I've never played Calamity Mod, but I think I have a Calamity Mod song in my Rivals music pack.
Ah, the best way.
It's so good. Yeah.
You interact with the Calamity Mod the same way I interact with Toho.
Yeah, and like 90% of people interact with Toho.
And it's, you know, that's fair. Hey, yeah. Speaking of cool music.
Yeah, so I talked about this a bit on the last episode, but the thing that has changed since then is that I got Galen to finally watch it.
Yeah.
Oshinoko, fantastic anime. I'm not going to go back over it too much. I don't actually remember what all I mentioned before, but it is about, like, the entertainment industry in Japan, specifically idols and TV and film acting. It is about the, like, technical side of that, what it means to be a professional actor or idol, the business side, what the expenses are, how to make money, how hard it is to make money.
Yeah.
It is also a, like, teen romance drama set in a high school with a bunch of famous people. It is also a murder mystery. It's also this, like, weird thriller at times that approaches Nathan For You levels of, like, backstabbery in conniving.
Nathan For You, yeah, that's the pull. Not like Death Note.
No, Nathan For You. They have a whole bit where they pretend to be scouting someone just to get dirt on another company.
Alright, you know,
that's such
fair.
A Nathan For You thing. I compared it to Finding Francis. How that happens like 5 times in Finding Francis. But it's so interesting. So it's written by the writer for Kaguya-sama, which I watched a little bit of. I couldn't super get into it. Maybe I'd like it more if I read it. But I am caught up with the Oshinoko manga, and I love it. And I am so glad the anime adaptation is good. So many things that I like have had shitty anime adaptations, but this one is great. It has a great sense of tone. The like facial animations are great between both expressions and more fine like sakuga cuts where they have somebody do a ton of detail on one cut just to make it emphasized.
Yeah, yeah.
The acting's great, the characters are still great, and, you know, feel better because of the acting. The addition of sound really adds to it by, like, letting you hear the music the characters are listening to. You know, when you have somebody performing music, it's pretty helpful to have music. It's also really funny because one of the earlier sort of arcs is about an adaptation of a manga, but the adaptation's shitty. And there's a lot of, like, tongue-in-cheek jokes that were in the original manga for Oshinoko, but, like, it takes on its own level of sort of self-awareness and self-referentiality when you put it in an anime adaptation.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing where, like, I understand that the original intent was not necessarily a meta joke, but, like, one of the characters explicitly says, like, you know, well, when you're adapting, like, you know, 14 volumes in 6 episodes or whatever, there's bound to be some things that are cut.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I see.
Especially compared to the first episode, which is an hour and a half long because they had to adapt, like, 30 chapters into one episode.
Yeah, yeah. Oshinoko, as someone who has only seen up to episode 3 currently, it's so, I went into this, the hook here was like, it is about the idol industry, warts and all. And I was like, okay, yeah, bring me in, make me cry, whatever. Like, you know, we kind of all, I say we, general culture knows and kind of accepts that the idol industry is really scummy and bad. And a lot of people just kind of decide not to think about it. This, number one, delves into that in a really interesting way, because it's not just, like, it's not just the like, deep, like, you know, sob stories, it's not the, like, really bad stuff, it's a lot of the, like, the mundane ways that capital just kind of, like, screws you over. Like, for example, it's brought up how idols do not make a lot of money at all. They have to, like, buy their own specific gear and stuff, and, like, the actual TV appearances and stuff that they do makes not, like, super not a lot of money. You know, even, like, merch sales and stuff like that is not really coming back to them. And so, you know, like, that's an interesting angle that I literally never knew. I never knew that that was how it was, but it essentially seems like being an idol is kind of like, I don't know, kind of like doing gig work, basically.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, you have to supply all your own shit on a meager budget that then, you know, feeds back into a very meager payout.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite running motifs is how capitalism is sort of like a specter upon all the works that people make.
Yeah.
So, like, early on, there's a scene where a group of idols is performing at a, like, TV studio for a broadcasted performance. And, you know, it starts with the idols preparing, and then it cuts to the crew, like the cameraman, the director, you know, audio tech, you know, mic people, photography and lights. And all of them, like, don't really care that much about the performance. They're all like, hey, have you heard of this group? Nah, not really. They don't seem that interesting. And I give them a year. Have you ever liked this? Nah, I'm just doing this for the job.
Yeah.
And, like, it feels like nobody wants to be there, but there is this spirit of money that dictates that is what they must do to make the most money. Like, it's a stand-in for just sort of audiences and, you know, personal or popular culture, public sort of desires.
Yeah.
But it sort of, it almost animizes that general drive into one solid force.
Yeah. It's the counterplay and the interplay, rather. The interplay between, like, genuine dreams and desire and the sort of harsh, stifling realities of just capitalism is a really consistent thing where, like, you know, and it doesn't seem to be entirely negative either. One of the main characters is somebody who wants to be an idol and, like, starts on that path, and, like, it shows the fan side as well in a really interesting way, especially in the first episode, where, like, it shows sort of the good and the bad of a parasocial relationship in a really fun way, where like it can show how, you know, a parasocial relationship can give somebody hope during hopeless times, and it also shows how it can be extremely creepy and bad and, you know, really obsessive.
Yeah.
And like it's the absolute refusal to just say this is bad or this is good is so interesting. I also want to say that while I am probably the last person who's able to really analyze this, there's some interesting feminist themes going on. Specifically in that there's a male character very early on. There's multiple different things where like a male character is talking to a female character who is by all rights his senior and is essentially like, no, you have to tell my sister no, or whatever, because I have trauma. I'm trying not to spoil anything.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's really interesting where it's the kind of thing where I immediately went, like, it's interesting how this kid, who, again, is not the senior in this situation, is, like, trying to boss around the stepmom.
Yeah.
And then she says, fuck him, more or less.
Pretty much, yeah.
She goes with her heart anyway, which is, again, based.
Yeah.
But, yeah, just... That's one of those little themes that I'm just like, I'm gonna make a mental pin of that and see if more things, support it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really good series.
Mm-hmm.
Again, episode 3 so far, although the first one is basically like 3 different episodes. It's an OVA, more or less.
Yeah.
Yeah, great series. Definitely recommend you check it out. So, so interesting. So good.
Yes. All right, so last night we stayed up too late, and we got really tired and delirious, and we decided to play Pokemon Stadium.
Yep. So Big Yellow did a video over Pokemon Stadium and its rentals-only metagame.
Shout out to Big Yellow.
Shout out to Big Yellow. And we decided to play it. We had some of the things in mind about it, but then we also just kind of played it, TM. It was honestly a really fun and interesting experience. I won 4 times in a row, which I'll admit kind of colors my perception a little bit.
I should completely mention that a lot of this, I was using moves that did not have 100% accuracy, like Sleep Powder or Sing or a number of attacking moves. And most of them either whiffed or killed or barely didn't kill within like 7 health or 2 health.
It was, yeah.
Also, I learned the hard way that poison in Gen 1, at least in Stadium, actually is like garbage.
It's so...
I was like, oh, I'll use Toxic and I'll stall out. That's fun. Here, I'll start with Jolteon, who is fast and has Toxic, and then I can switch out to like Snorlax. Use Toxic. Turns out, Toxic ticks down when the Pokemon does a move, and... if the Pokemon that is poisoned kills the other one, poison doesn't tick down.
Yep.
So even if I poisoned his big sweeper, it would just sweep anyways and just not die. So that's fun.
Yeah. I had 21 health at one point against a paralyzed Kadabra, I believe. And I literally managed to kill the Kadabra because you ended up like whiffing 2 shots to paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
And poison only did 10 health.
Yeah.
And so at one point I survived on 1 health. It was insane.
It was a bit of a joke.
It was yeah. RNG, I very much cannot say that RNG wasn't on my side that day. That was so many. I took my own amount of risky moves, and so many of them still just like were like, oh yeah, sure, boss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's very funny.
Yes.
It was a very funny experience.
It did make me want to go back and play Stadium 2. See, I didn't grow up with Stadium 1. We rented it, but we never owned it. But we eventually did get a copy of Stadium 2, and I played that so much growing up. Because, I mean, rental Pokemon battles are still a fantastic local multiplayer thing.
Yeah.
And Stadium 2 has the better minigames.
Yeah, it does.
Like...
we played them all last night.
Yeah, there's only like 2 good mini games in Stadium 1. I'll let you guess what they are.
Fairy.
Well, okay, I'll let you guess what the other one is.
But Pokemon Stadium is it's a really neat game, even beyond just the rentals. Like, I think about it, and I think about the spiritual successor a lot more, the one on the Wii, mm-hmm. that was Gen 4.
Battle Revolution.
Yeah, because, like, Battle Revolution was even more of an undertaking, basically.
Didn't Colosseum's, like side mode also have rentals?
I
want to say it did, but I never messed with the side mode. I only ever tried the story mode and got stuck.
I have never played either of the GameCube games, unfortunately.
Colosseum's great. It's so edgy.
I want to. I was a very young kid, and I was just like, this guy looks so cool. I want to be him. and then I never played it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I have the complex that I have today. But yeah, Pokemon Stadium is such an interesting beast as well, where it's like, it's... I can imagine being a kid and having that magic, mm-hmm. of like, it's not just that, oh, my Charmander or my Charizard, you know, knows Aerial Ace or whatever the fuck. It's that he's flying. He's literally flying now.
There's so many great animations. Like, Surf is always fantastic.
Yeah.
The way Dig makes you, like, drill down into the ground is so funny.
Yeah.
It's full of just fantastic animations, except Leech Seed, which is freaky.
Yeah, Leech Seed sucks.
Seeds have too much detail.
It's so bad. I hate it.
It almost triggers my, like, fungal phobia.
Yeah, it's so bad. Gross.
Yeah, it's really rewarding in that regard. Also, the fact that, like, also, a lot of Pokemon have a lot of quirky little traits to their animations, like Kadabra has his spoon, and the spoon plays a big factor in what he does.
Yep.
Kangaskhan's baby comes out and cheers for her. It's cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Marowak, like, one of Marowak's moves is, like, the bone throw, and she actually, like, whacks a bone, mm-hmm. at the opponent.
Or when you use bulk up or focus energy, it, like, weight lifts the bone, like, a dumbbell. I love when Pokemon games make a big point of showing the Pokemon acting like themselves. I've probably talked about this before, that, like, as somebody who plays the games competitively and likes hardcore Nuzlockes, it is so easy for me to view Pokemon as, like, game pieces in data rather than animals.
Yeah.
So that's why things like Pokemon Stadium or Pokemon Snap / New Pokemon Snap are so effective to me, because they go out of their way to really be like, all right, what do these Pokemon actually do? What do they act like, given what we have described?
Yeah. It's there. Like I said, there's a certain magic to it that I love.
That's also why I always love the Pikachu mini movies before every movie.
Yeah.
Because those were all about the Pokemon by themselves doing whatever they wanted.
I always loved the ones with the Pichu twins.
Oh, the Pichu brothers.
Brothers.
Third movie and third Pikachu movie are my favorite, but especially the third Pikachu movie.
So, on this note, actually, I want to get into the theory crafting portion of today's episode. Not the Zootamayo theory crafting.
Yeah.
That was just, you know, describing things.
I did want to say one thing.
Yes.
If you've never seen the way rental teams work in Stadium, what you need to know is that you can choose any Pokemon except Mew or Mewtwo, and
all are level 50 and all have preset movesets.
Yes. However, typically, the good moves will be on the second and first stage of evolutions, if, you know, the earlier stages. In the final stage, we'll have usually worse moves, but they have the better stats to make up for it.
Yeah.
There's seemingly consideration on what goes where. Like, Kadabra has recovered, but Alakazam does not.
Yeah.
But then you have some really interesting choices, like how Venusaur does not have sleep powder. It has stun spore, I think, or maybe just poison powder.
I think it has stun spore.
Ivysaur has sleep powder. The only Pokemon with spore, which is the only 100% accurate sleep move in Gen 1, is Parasect. So, like, that's an example of where they took a Pokemon that doesn't really have a niche and tried to buff it by restricting what other Pokemon had. So giving itself its own sort of role.
Yeah.
Or, like, Persian's really good because it has Stab Slash, which has a high crit rate, and it's the only one that has that.
Yeah. This is also a really interesting system where PP kind of matters quite a bit. Snorlax has Mega Kick, which is its big stupid stab move. It's a really good move, but Mega Kick has 5 PP.
Yeah.
And so, you know, even in the best case scenario, you're going to have one, you know, answer that you have to have something else for.
Yeah.
By
the way, spoiler alert, normal types in Gen 1 are really strong.
Yeah. Yeah. The classic 3 is the classic 3 in every in, you know, Pokemon Gen 1 OU is Tauros, Chansey, and Snorlax.
Mm-hmm.
So like
they're all pretty good too.
Yeah.
Tauros is a little weaker, but it has double edge, I think, or takedown.
It has double edge.
Yeah. So I mean, it still has that. It has stab double edge.
Yeah. Chansey is still Chansey. Chansey and Snorlax both have rest, which is less good of a recovery move because they're very stingy about recovery moves. Chansey doesn't have soft boiled, which is hilarious, but like they still function pretty dang well.
Snorlax is still often a meta Pokemon to this day.
Yeah.
Because it fills the solid role of being the bulky monster that does a ton of damage and it's slow, and in later games being slow can be good. But in early games, it's just bulky and powerful.
Yeah.
It's a tank that hits like a truck. So it's an armored truck.
It's an isekai truck.
Yeah, pretty much.
So here's my theory crafting. This is the question that I pose and that I feel like people on the internet very well could also pose. Is Nintendo going to have Gen 1, like Gen 1, you know, Game Boy, probably even Gen 1 and Gen 2 Game Boy games coming to the Nintendo Switch Online, Game Boy, and or Game Boy Advance systems?
Here's, by the way, I wouldn't really call this theory crafting. This is more speculation. There's not really much crafting to be had.
True.
I thought you were going to talk about theory crafting teams or anything.
Oh, no. I am not the person you should ask about that.
Yeah.
I picked Zapdos and Snorlax and one, and that's all I can really
say. Yeah, that's the core.
Yeah.
So I think there's an actually 50% chance they do it. I feel like they would more likely release them as like $4 games like they did on the 3DS.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, Pokemon TCG Game Boy, has that been put on Switch?
Not yet, but it is planned to.
Yeah, so they at least have like, you know, the other Pokemon stuff in mind. I think so if it gets put on Switch Online, they will probably try to work in rentals. However, the fact that it's ultimately both emulated, I don't know how that would, you know, factor.
Yeah.
So the way it works on the Nintendo 64 is the part of the controller that you put in, like, the bottom part, there is an adapter that comes with Stadium that you can then put Pokemon Red or Blue or Yellow into. And then in Stadium 2, you can also do Gold, Silver, Crystal. And then from there, you can import more or less your Pokemon from those games into Stadium.
Yeah.
So that would mean that they would, I guess, have a virtual version of that that loads your save file from the other game. So maybe it wouldn't be as hard. I don't know how their infrastructure works.
Yeah. Like
small indie company Nintendo seems to be filled with pasta chefs and that they have a ton of spaghetti code wherever they walk. So like I don't know, maybe not. I literally, there's no way to predict with Nintendo.
Yeah like here's the thing is that on one hand this requires that Nintendo give out a really interesting and cool service for, I mean, not free, but like essentially as a reward to something that I would pretty much argue anybody who would subscribe to more or less already has. I don't know if there's many people who, like, aren't already subscribed to the updated, the even better Nintendo Switch Online, who would be specifically swayed by this. And so part of me says, you know, it's probably not going to happen. But at the same time, like, it's the infrastructure is right there, you know? It feels like something where it's like they obviously have to have had this conversation, right? Of like, you know, if we had, you know, like a system where, you could, you know, it had a front end maybe where it was like, oh, pick a Pokemon game from the suspend menu. It's like, do you want to load, you know, your save from the other thing that you get with this specific upgraded version of Nintendo Switch Online? And so it's like, it's yes, the Pokemon TCG was the only Pokemon game that was actually, you know, announced for it. But like, it seems like something that they have to know. They have to know. And if they did it, I genuinely think it would be like, that would be a step forward almost for like gaming preservation, you know?
Yeah. So here's sort of some things about Pokemon as a series.
Yeah.
People love living dexes, which is where you have every Pokemon caught. And for series that, you know, for older games, that includes bringing older games forward to the future.
Yeah.
That's why Dexit was so big to a lot of people, because they wanted to have the living dex with everything on one system. Even if they weren't going to play the story mode with these older Pokemon, they wanted to just have them all in one place.
Yeah.
Pokemon Home was sort of the idea behind that. It's just the place where you put your Pokemon to show that you've caught them, that then can be transferred sometimes to other games. That's how you transferred up from Sun and Moon to Sword and Shield.
Yeah.
So the 3DS was really important because it was a way to connect Red, Blue, Yellow, and Gold, Silver, Crystal to Home, because you would play the emulated versions on the 3DS, and then, you know, those connect to Home.
Yeah.
With that gone, I feel like it would make sense from the Pokemon Company standpoint, because, like, while there have been breaks in continuity, points where you can't easily, like, move everything forward.
Yeah.
Like, that was sort of the point behind Fire Red and Leaf Green.
Yeah.
It was that, like, you couldn't go from Game Boy to Game Boy Advance, so they created the remakes to solve that problem. But with the Pokemon Home thing already having been done once, I wouldn't be surprised if their long-term plan was to put those games on the Nintendo Switch, and then also, you know, let you import them from into Pokemon Home. And which, like, I assume they would be able to then have you put into Stadium, but the thing is, like, they have to make sure it's a game for a Pokemon from Gen 1, and I don't know if there's a way to, like, mark that digitally.
Yeah.
Is there a part of the code in Home that's like, this Pokemon came from Gold, Silver on the thing? You know, because I don't know. It's another one where I don't know how it's programmed.
Yeah.
So that would be the most logical, like, this is what would make sense in terms of players. I don't think they would do that, but I think sooner they would have the Pokemon games added, but then they would just directly connect to Stadium.
Yeah.
Even then, no clue if that's something they can do or want to do, because again, Nintendo never does what you expect, for better and for worse.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, Nintendo has put out, by all accounts, one of the single best games in recent memory that I really want to play. Donate to my GoFundMe to buy me a copy. But they also, you know, very recently sued a guy into indentured servitude forever.
The Kaiji Poverty Mines.
Yeah. It's Nintendo is a company that I want to like, but they're also a company, and by right of being a company, they kind of fucking suck a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And I can't blame them for, I mean, I can blame them for suing a guy into fucking oblivion. Even if he did break the law in the way that he did, and he did break the law in a kind of a fucked up way, putting somebody in poverty basically forever based off of theoretical losses that you can't even really prove,
yeah,
is fucking insane.
Yeah.
But to get off my soapbox, if we talk about them just as a company, and even if we talk about just Pokemon as an entity of that company, Pokemon is a series that has a lot of, like, through lines that end, and there are ways around it. You know, like you said, they specifically made the remakes because they wanted people to be able to actually have the first gen things on the current gen, the third gen. And that's also pretty much why they made, like, the second gen remakes on the DS. And that's also why, like, the cross-compatibility with the 3DS was so huge. And, you know, barring some strange little circumstances, like the fact that, you know, Celebi is still kind of a rarity to actually get legitimately...
Or Jirachi.
Jirachi, yeah.
Most event Pokemon, really.
Yeah, the event Pokemon are the ones that are kind of, like, you know, slightly lost to time, but there are ways to sort of cheat them in, or there are really weird, like, awkward roundabout ways to get them legitimately mm-hmm. that require, like, a fucking Pokemon demo disc. But the point here is that Pokemon generally, like, a lot of the things have been done, a lot of decisions have been made to try and keep at least some of that cross-compatibility. And Stadium, as it exists right now, feels like something where they could do something really cool. They could do something to, like, try and restore functionality that has essentially been completely lost to time on these versions. Like, beyond just emulating them, which, I mean, emulate these games realistically is the real answer. Like, you could probably, I'm willing to bet 100% there is a front-end thing where you, you know, can play Pokemon on Visual Boy Advance and then, you know, go to the N64 emulator and be like, import my game from here. It seems like there's functionality lost to time that, like, there's a really easy way to just connect two dots. And I don't mean easy in the coding way, but I also definitely mean it in the way of, like, whatever the solution is, Nintendo could figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, Nintendo was famously kind of shit with emulation early on, but, like, they have since figured a lot of things out, and I, myself and a bunch of other friends, including you, pay for this, because it's a cool system. I like having N64 games and GBA games on my Switch, but it feels like this would be the kind of thing that could actually show that they're willing to go above and beyond.
Yeah.
You know, GoldenEye was cool, but this would be the kind of thing that would, like, restore lost functionality so that new people could actually experience it.
Yeah.
That would be so awesome.
Yeah, it's... A lot of times with this service, it feels like they put things in there to be maintenance mode, which is why when they do things like add online multiplayer, it's really neat, because it shows that they're not just putting the ROM in the emulator and saying, have at it.
Yeah.
They're actually modifying things in a way that fits the modern market and landscape. But they just need to go, like, a little more.
Yeah, they need to put more effort into it.
They've met the bare minimum mile, but there's an extra mile ahead of them.
Yeah, so,
talking about retro games, I've been playing through the Mega Man games on my stream, twitch.tv/twack, as part of a charity marathon where I play Mega Man 1 through 11 and X through X6. And part of this is because I love Mega Man as a series. Part of this is because I kind of have this routine of playing all the Mega Man games once a year all the way through, and I figured doing that for charity would make sense. And part of it is because I've slowly been working on sort of a series retrospective of Mega Man, and I want to play through the games in a row to sort of get a feel for them even more, do research, and formulate thoughts. Here's some basic thoughts, really quickly, to wrap up the episode. Number one. Mega Man 5 is ass. The weapons suck. Everything's too easy. The charge shot's too strong. Enemies have too low health. The only good enemy is the chicken enemy.
And that's it. Goodbye.
The boss fights are boring most of the time. The only good thing about Mega Man 5 is that the levels look nice. Don't talk about Napalm Man stage. Mega Man 6 is a little better. Oh, and the music in Mega Man 5 is, like, abrasive. Mega Man 6 is a little better. It has better music than 5 and maybe even 4, but it's still not great. The weapons are pretty boring. Level design's a little better. There is this thing I have noticed where they rarely get anything right the first time, or even the second time with Mega Man. For example, Metal Blade, for example. The weapon was really busted. So when they made Mega Man 3, they made the Shadow Blade, which fixes a lot of the issues. It can't be aimed as freely, the ammo's a lot tighter, it doesn't have as much damage against most enemies. It's a more fair weapon. the charge shot in Mega Man 3. No, in Mega Man 4, it was introduced, and it was really good because you could just hold it. In Mega Man 5, they added it so where when you take hits, you lose your charge. So when you get hits done, you lose charge. So there's a risk to just holding it rather than shooting.
There's an actual decision making element.
Yeah, which is one of the better things they did in Mega Man 5. But since the enemies had too low health, everything died in one hit from the charge shot, so it didn't matter. So Mega Man 6, they finally upped the health on enemies again after lowering it from 4 to 5 and then bringing it back up. And they kept the hit stun change. Sliding is one of the only things they've done correctly the first time. It was such a perfect inclusion because it makes replaying more fun because you can start working in the new like speed gained from it. You know, it brought speedrunning to a greater set focus because like you had an option to go fast now, but it was risky because you couldn't shoot and you couldn't easily turn around or stop yourself. So it was less precise, but faster. Also, it's a dodge, and it's implemented really well into the boss fights. The only other thing they did good the first time, other than that, was wall jumping in Mega Man X. Mega Man X is great. It has fantastic music. There's a while where they seem to be losing their way with the music in the classic series, but Mega Man X brings it back to its rock roots, which is great. For more on that, listen to Faithfully by Journey, and then listen to Elecman Stage. Mega Man X does have a lot of issues. I think some of the level design is still sort of feeling out the change in console specs and abilities. The fact that the dash upgrade is just there in the open in one of the Maverick stages, and you don't start with it, but it's just there, is always so weird to me. Like, there's no reason not to do Chill Penguin first. Everyone knows that nowadays because the dash is there and you don't need to do anything extra to get to it, whereas all the other upgrades you have to like go down an alternate path or fight an alternate boss.
That's interesting in a bad way.
Yeah, it's just there. It's just, you can walk, it's right there. Just get the dash. And that's why in every Mega Man X after X1, they just give you the dash to start off with.
Right.
But wall jumping feels great. Especially once you get dash, it feels great. But, like, that's one of the changes that makes Mega Man X so different, is, like, it goes from being a precision platformer with calculated jumps to a momentum platformer with fast jumps, with movement.
Mm.
That momentum doesn't necessarily carry over the way it does for, like, Sonic, where if you're running fast in the air, then you'll be fast when you land, but you can at least carry your dash movement into the jump, and then you can dash with wall jumps, and there's a lot of, like, it has a solid flow to it. And I think there's a lot of times in X where it feels like they wanted to make a precision platformer, but they forgot that they also gave you these movement tools, so they didn't know what to do. And I think they do a much better job at balancing those in the later X games.
Makes sense.
Also, they kind of have like a Metroid thing going on where there are these different upgrades, but most of them don't really do much. You get the movement upgrade and dash. You get the charge upgrade, which gives your charge shot an additional tier, and you can charge up sub-weapons, which is really cool. Don't get me wrong. That's the other thing X did right the first time. You can charge up weapons you get from Mavericks now, and it's beautiful. It adds some exploration in, like, trying all the new versions out. Some of them have a lot of utility. Chill Penguin lets you make a platform. Sting Chameleon lets you turn invincible for a bit. Really cool option. The other two upgrades you get are damage reduction and a helmet that lets you break blocks with your head, of which there's about 3 times in the game you could do so.
Nice. I love it.
So, you know, reasonable upgrade to have for the damage reduction, but it's not super flashy. The helmet's really weird and only exists to give you the charge beam upgrade. And then there's, like, max health upgrades and energy tank upgrades, and those are cool. But they go much more into the, like, upgrading your capabilities in movement and combat in the later X games, which makes a lot of sense because they kind of turn it into, like, Mega Man Metroid.
Yeah.
It's not Metroidvania necessarily, but you get these upgrades to let you access other stuff in other levels, meaning that backtracking and exploration is suddenly this big feature, which is something they tried to do with 5 and 6, but it didn't really work out right. So again, it took them a few games to get it good.
Yeah.
So yeah.
A few games and an entire console generation.
Yeah. It's also really funny because X1 came out a month after Mega Man 6.
Yeah, this is something you've talked about multiple times, is like, the dev cycle of the Mega Man games was kind of insane.
They were yearly releases, and then, yeah, the X game came out after 6, then X2 came out the next year, and then I believe X3 and then 7 came out the following year. So,
just absolutely fucking crazy.
Yeah, the Mega Man series is this really weird series where it feels like it's ran several life cycles, and, like, it rarely was, if ever, 10 out of 10. It's sometimes very good, sometimes kind of meh. Very rarely is it ever absolute garbage. But it's so interesting. It has this history, and you can feel the developers behind the screen. There's the element of artistry where, like, it goes from just being a work that you consume to a work where you can notice the people who made it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's so cool. But it's only like that because they keep making problems that they improve later. By making it bad, or not making it the best the first time, it somehow brought my attention more to them and made me respect the changes later on.
It's so interesting. You have compared it to Call of Duty before. Like, it is the Call of Duty of its day. And as somebody who played Call of Duty very early, obviously I would never say that these are two entirely comparable things, but the way that you describe, like, being able to see the artistry and sort of how they refine and refine things is really, like, really strikes a chord with me in how, like, I could immediately tell the upgrades from, like, the first Call of Duty to the second to the third to the fourth, and then the fifth, and then it got bad after that. But the first four Call of Duty games have a lot of artistry behind them and a lot of artistic intent, and, like, It's interesting to hear about a series that I do not have any real history with, talked about in a very similar way to something that I know quite intimately.
Right. It, as, like, a game designer, Mega Man as a series is really good to sort of do a case study on, or just a study on. That would be, like, that could be a fun, like, class, you know?
Yeah.
Play through the Mega Man games and discuss the design of them. Because it's very clear, I think, the design process behind certain changes, which is just interesting to study.
Yeah.
And that about does it for this episode. Thanks for listening. You can always follow us on any podcasting platform you like. Give us a like, give us a rating, give us a review. Let us know how we're doing, let us know what you'd be interested in us covering, or just recommend things we might be interested in based on the type of stuff we've talked about. You can also follow us on Twitter to get updates on new episodes that way, as well as teasers for upcoming episodes. And, boy howdy, will we have some new teasers coming up. So keep an eye out for that. It's Twitter, NetSurferPro, at NetSurferPro on Twitter. That's what it's called, at NetSurferPro. You can also follow me on Twitter, at Twackaroo, at TWAKAROO. Where I post updates on projects I'm working on, things I've been doing. Recently, there was a big board game convention in town, and so I sort of live-tweeted my reaction/experiences/first impressions on a lot of different board games. So if you're interested in that, check that out. I also post updates for when I go live on my stream at twitch.tv/twack, which I hinted at earlier. I stream most weekdays from about 1 p.m. Central Time to 3 or 4 p.m. Central Time, and lately I've been playing through every single Mega Man game, as I hinted at earlier. But normally I play a lot of roguelites, competitive games, some fighting games here and there. Maybe once Strive servers are fixed, I'll play Netplay with the new character. Shouts out to Cubes. So yeah, if you're interested in that type of stuff, follow me there.
As for myself, you can find me on TikTok and on Twitter at Galen Wilson. That's at GalenWLS0N. I post my hot takes and sometimes videos of my cat. I did a little two-parter video over Mr. Beast recently, if you're interested in that.
Mr. Beast!
You can find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube, and you can find me at Twitch, at twitch.tv/machinegunvampire. Where I've said it before and I'll say it again, I might start streaming one of these days. I've got gainful employment and it happens to work pretty well with my schedule, so who knows? Fingers crossed.
Yeah, let's go employed guy.
Yeah, employee.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you very much for listening. We will be back with our regularly scheduled program pretty soon.
And it won't include Legend of Zelda.
We're never going to talk about Legend of Zelda again.